Hi, welcome to another episode of BSing with Sean K. I'm your host, Sean Neese. And on this show, I have long-form interviews with artists, musicians, actors, activists, bloggers, comedians, and other people who are pursuing their creative and intellectual passions and living outside the box.
Welcome to my YouTube channel. I'm glad you could make it by. I would like to entertain you and educate your mind about all the things that interest me and inspire me and make me smile. And I would like you to join me on this channel, so we can have a really, really good time. So don't forget to subscribe, and I will see you soon.
And this is episode 94. And on this episode, I'm going to play you a conversation I had with Gabrielle Angel Lilly. And she is a Jane of all trades. She is a musician and a YouTuber. She does motivational YouTube videos and also outdoor videos. And that clip was from her YouTube channel. That's a video, that's like her intro video, I believe. And I just put that clip in there because I feel like it's a good summary of, you know, everything she does. You know, she does the motivational videos and music. She does solo music like that, folk music, and she also is in a rock band called 1,000 Words. And she talks about that in the interview. And she also founded a business called Sleeping Dragons Company. It is described as your one-stop shop for cosmetic and perfumery supplies. And Sleeping Dragons has a vast selection of essential oil sets, bulk herbs, hard-to-find absolutes, fragrance oils, and more. I know a lot of my recent guests have been from the New York area, the New York and New Jersey area, and I've been doing a lot more interviews in person. This is my first guest I have had on in a while that's like a long-distance guest. And I always like to switch things up like that. She's from New Mexico. I've never been to New Mexico, so it was cool to learn from her about, I guess, what the music scene's like there and what life in general is like there. And so we recorded the interview over Skype, and it was still, you know, a great conversation. I've said recently I prefer in-person interviews, but, you know, that's not always possible, and Skype interviews makes it possible to interview people around the country and around the world. So, you know, they definitely both have their advantages and disadvantages. But this was a great conversation, and I found her YouTube channel a while ago through an episode of the Joe Rogan Experience she commented on YouTube. And yeah, I liked a lot of what she had to say. And then she found my podcast through one of my Instagram posts. So yeah, it was cool to have her on, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thanks. Yeah, you do music, motivational videos, and you do, you have a business, too.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, Sleeping Dragons Company. That's an alchemy and beauty supply.
Correct, yeah. It used to be like creativity supply. It's herbs and essential oils, and I'm in the process of shifting it to a more current set of terminology, so hence the alchemy and beauty supply.
Okay, so the main thing you're pursuing now is music, then.
I don't know if I would say that's accurate. I mean, I consider myself a multimedia storyteller, and so I like to use music and words and pictures and video to try to promote positivity. And really, I'm in the process of creating a new brand called Unity Play, so up. And my broad vision, what I've been building toward the last 10 years, is ultimately a global infrastructure, a set of Unity Play stations where people come together and make music and explore, you know, share their art and eat tacos and give talks, and sort of like a Meow Wolf meets TED Talk meets me kind of endeavor.
So what inspired that idea?
So you may have seen pictures of what I call the Head Hut mega sculpture in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And that was what I consider my classroom. And I started that about 10 years ago. And that's about the same time this Unity Play inspiration started, although it's gone through several evolutions of words and visualization. The picture in my head has remained pretty constant. And that was mainly inspired by frustration with society and, you know, depression, kind of a mental breakdown, and a decision that I needed to find a way to contribute positively to life and feel like I had some sense of purpose that was in alignment with my true nature. So that's the evolution I'm continuing with.
So you're kind of not only trying to inspire other people with your positive message, but also help yourself as well.
Very much. It was, so I'm working on some online courses as well. And those are about transforming or alchemizing limiting beliefs. And that's due to my own realization that my own limiting beliefs were keeping me, you know, from the life that I would most desire. And so I, having studied education, I know that the best way to learn is through teaching often, and vice versa. So I have embarked on this journey to share my own learning process in the hopes that it helps others. And yeah, it's very much about my own evolution.
Yeah, so, what's the most rewarding thing about it?
It's both the learning that I do, and then that sense of feeling like I've helped. So when my son moved out, I came to the realization, you know, he grew up and went to college, moved out like a good son does, and left me, as many parents are, realizing that I had kind of put a lot of my sense of purpose and worth into being a mother. And not that I'm, you know, I'm still a mother, but that's reached a new phase where I really felt like I needed to, and again, I mentioned that was 10 years ago that I started the Head Hut project. That was, you know, my grappling with my own mental breakdown and realizing that I hadn't really been evolving, you know, of my own accord. I've been kind of stagnantly trying to meet societal expectations. So a lot of this is me leaping into, you know, exploring myself and my own evolution, and yeah, finding that sense of purpose, like I can contribute to society through teaching.
Like you said, you had a breakdown. All that. Are you looking to maybe help other people that are going through similar emotions? Or
yeah, on the broad scope, just looking to help shift, you know, humanity towards that growth mindset, that infinite opportunity kind of place that we all can be. And on a more personal level, I was incarcerated as a juvenile, so I have a special, you know, affinity for trying to help people who are really, really stuck in that limited mindset, because I feel like I can speak to that pretty well. I've been a lot of the low places, so I feel like lifting myself out of that could be an inspiration or an example for others, as others have been for me.
And your music is another way, I guess, you do it for similar reasons that you do your business, I guess, like for the positive, like you were saying earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. So music has been, it's a little interesting the last couple of years, as I feel like anytime I pursue music, kind of the universe conspires heavily to support that, which I love. And at the same time, I sometimes feel like it, wants to want it the music that I play with others is often wants to stray or veer toward covers and not really capturing that positive momentum that I'm always trying to turn back towards. So I've had some resistance in my playing with others, and I don't mean to blame it on others, like in my own songwriting, some of that is just cathartic, you know, dealing with my own struggles. And then, and what I've tried to put my energy in promoting and sharing more is things that I've found uplifting and that I can try to promote that positive message with. So I'm always kind of trying to pull myself back to that positive messaging, because I feel like that's best for me and for the world. But music tends to, you know, like you mentioned punk earlier, and I love some death metal. I love some punk. Mm-hmm. I love a lot of dark stuff. And in my youth, I really reveled in a lot of darkness, and I still am quite comfortable there. But I'm trying to, that's why I like the word alchemy, I guess, lately, is I'm really, it's not that I'm trying to change that, but trying to grow from that, you know.
Maybe like most people need a balance of both, because I feel like maybe nobody can, I guess nobody can be like positive all the time, so maybe there always is always like a need for like that catharsis as well, and then you can get back into, there's always going to be like, even if like you're mainly like in a positive state, like there's always going to be like that dark side too. I feel maybe right. Like maybe it's, I guess it's in a, it's better to sometimes embrace that too, and then you're not repressing it and like accept that, and then you can more easily move on from that, rather than, I guess, because then otherwise I guess you can get in the state of like trying to repress like a negative or dark
right
feeling, yeah, or thought. Yeah,
I mean, I think the shadow is important, you know, we all have that aspect, and for me it's about loving that part too, which sound, you know, might sound Pollyanna, but it's I'm getting better and better at not being overwhelmed by that shadow side of myself. But and this is where I think music and theater and art do really come in handy, because you can theatricize that shadow self and kind of approach it in a playful way that takes some of that weight away from it, you know, so it makes it easier to bounce back into the positive from. But I've learned definitely that avoiding it doesn't, you know, it just makes it grow. Like it's that vibrational focus. So to resist something is just to make it grow. So it's more about turning around and loving that shadow aspect of myself, which is tricky to put into words, but I think feeling wise, it gets pretty easy and clear. Really. It's about turning toward the, you know, toward less resistance all the time.
That was what you were talking about in the song Eclipse that I heard, right? Your shadow a bit. I think, yeah.
Yeah, that song I wrote on Christmas Eve a couple years ago, which a friend of mine called Adam's Eve. Yeah, I think, because it was in a, which I liked. And it was an eclipse of the moon that night. And I get a lot of inspiration from the moon, new moons and full moons. I've noticed I tend to get a lot of special creative energy that I feel like is out there in the universe all the time. And as an artist, I can be a conduit for that if I'm aligned with it. And so that song Eclipse, which I haven't written many songs in the last few years, I kind of go through, you know, spurts of writing a lot and not writing much. And it's been not much the last couple of years. That was actually one of the last songs that I really wrote and developed enough to play for people. So
it's been more performing.
Yeah, the last couple of years has been. So I'm in a band, and we lost a bass player to suicide a few years ago. And since then, it's been a long path of replacing that bass player and trying to relearn our original stuff, you know, or teach it to him and evolve into the new group that we are. And so the last year has been just us getting out and kind of replaying and then adding some covers, which has been frustrating for me because, as I mentioned, I feel like it's not always in alignment with that growth that I'm trying to cultivate in myself. But on the other hand, you know, it is what it is. And when I really look at the life I want to live, playing music with others is still very much a part of that. So I'm grateful that I have that.
And how did you get started with the band you're in now?
The band I'm in now, Thousand Words, Wayne Waltz is the lead guitar player and the other songwriter in that band, and he and I started a side project about 5 years ago called Alternation, which was an acoustic project with just he and I basically taking turns playing our original songs together and backing each other up. And then they had a change of, I think their singer went with another band, and so he asked me to join, you know, if I wanted to come try out playing with that band, and I've been with them ever since.
So,
but he's played that, they've been a group under a few different names for, you know, 20 years or so. Wayne has with different, the drummer and the guitar player of that group have played together more than 10 years. And the bass player who killed himself had been with them since he was a teenager, about 10 years as well.
So is there a big, like, what's popular in, you're in New Mexico, so I imagine it's a lot, like, it's a little different than here in, like, New Jersey and New York. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. New Mexico is a weird, you know, it's kind of a low income state, and the music scene is an interesting, like, I've kind of dabbled in it for most of my life in the New Mexican music scene. And so I've seen it go through, like, there's been a lot of great artists come out of here, but generally to make it, they go somewhere else, you know? So the scene here is pretty, I've heard it said that Albuquerque is the biggest small town you ever go to. It's got, even though it's approaching a million with the, all the suburbs, it's, you know, the metro, it's still, got that small town feel and not a big nightlife. And then now I'm, you know, approaching 50. So it's an interesting thing to be out trying to play live music at venues that are mostly trying to attract, you know, people in their 20s and 30s. So.
And how did you first get involved, like, in the scene there?
Well, I started playing guitar when fifth grade, and I've been a songwriter since the, you know, my whole life, pretty much since then. And when my son moved out, I realized, actually it was before my son moved out, when he was in high school, I was actually in a little band with my son. I got to play original music with my son playing bass at one point and a couple other friends. And then, the main songwriter in that group ended up getting arrested for being involved in a child porn ring all of a sudden, and never made it to practice, and didn't see him again for years and years. So that was actually one of those catalysts that sparked my kind of mental breakdown that then led me to the Head Hut project and this Unity Play vision that I've been simmering in for a while now.
And you also perform solo too, right? Not just with a band.
Yeah. Yeah, I do some open mic stuff, and I do, actually lately I've been thinking that I may do another stint of just solo stuff, because I feel like there's some exploration for me there. It's a different, you know, it's a much different thing to play with people or to play with yourself, and I like both quite a bit. So
I guess, how does the experience differ, I guess, like you're performing with a band or you're performing by yourself, like is there pros and cons to both?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely advantages and disadvantages to everything in life. But as far as playing sola versus with a group, with a group, you know, they have my back, so I can be a lot less perfect, and at the same time, it's there's more dynamics going on, so it's less about me and more about us trying to sound good together. It's a whole kind of different basket of challenges for me. Whereas when I'm playing by myself, it feels a little more vulnerable, but at the same time, me able to just get into, you know, and it's just about me as far, or me in the audience, you know, it's not, well, and actually I play a lot just for myself. A lot is an exaggeration lately, but sometimes.
And you've played in other areas too, like outside of New Mexico? Or?
Not a lot, no. I work in Colorado pretty often these days, and I've had some offers. You know, I've played like just informally at a couple parties, and had people tell me I should you know, get into some of the bars there, but I haven't made time to pursue that really. So, and I lived in northern New Mexico my childhood, so I used to play in Santa Fe with some friends and kind of likewise would get invited to play or sing with people. And here in Albuquerque, I have several networks of friends that are in different groups, and I do get invited to sing backup fairly often with other groups, which is fun for me because it's again a different level of pressure and kind of nice to be a supporter and not the main lead person. But I see opportunity for growth and failure in everything. I'm kind of always looking for that. Where's the positive, you know? So.
Yeah, and I guess has there been when you've traveled to like other places like Colorado, has there been like any like culture shocks or anything, like anything you were surprised, like this, how other places are like different from New Mexico?
I don't think I've been surprised, but it definitely is different. New Mexico is so easygoing and slow that I kind of quickly get overwhelmed sometimes now because I've been here so long. And when I'm here, I think I'm craving that faster pace, you know, but when I get like into the Denver area, just even traffic sometimes is overwhelming from just the amount of people and energy is more than I'm used to from being kind of in laid back New Mexico here. The wild, wild west, open space, which is nice to come home to. I like it.
So I guess and your style of music is like, I guess now is more like folk, or is that how you describe it, or?
Well, yeah, when I'm playing by myself, I think that's accurate. It's fairly folksy, but why I love playing with Thousand Words is because in my heart, I like rock and roll and some country too. I used to really resist the country, but I've come to appreciate that that's in my roots as well. And so it's hard to, the labeling is one of the hardest things for me. You know, I really, I've been calling it a Thousand Words rock with a country blues southwestern flair. Yes. I do hear some southwestern flavor in our sound, especially when I'm playing with them, and I feel like my solo stuff is bringing some of that to the group, even though it doesn't come through as much when I'm playing by myself, but the group is able to kind of bring that out in my song sometimes. So
I guess that's what like you grew up with listening to, and a lot of people around there listen to, is more like blues and country and folk.
Yeah, way early, I just started wearing a cowgirl hat again the last few years. And when I was young, I used to get teased at school because I always wore a cowgirl hat. And and then at some point, you know, teens hit, puberty hit, and I joined the I hate anything but, you know, I love all music except country bandwagon that a lot of people are still on. And then I got to go to, I actually won tickets to a country show about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago up in Pagosa Springs, and that really tore down that wall for me because I realized it's such a fun, you know, like that's the simplicity of country gives a lot of room for just the enjoyment of playing together with a group. And ultimately my guitar playing is not, you know, I would love for it to be better, but I don't quite put in the work to develop it past that rhythm strumming arena that I tend to stick in. I sometimes think I'm going to challenge myself to break out of that, but ultimately I like singing. I think I'm a better singer than I am a guitar player. And so, I've kind of been embracing more of that and really just strumming the guitar as a backup, which leads itself easier to the blues country avenue than the more progressive or rock and roll avenue that some of my peers like to dive into.
Well, I guess folk and country, and actually even on a different spectrum, we were talking about, I mentioned that, like I do some kind of punk influence music, like music like that is more like putting a feeling into it rather than focusing on like the technicality or like a lot of solos and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, I would say that it's accurate that I'm going for a feeling most of the time and not, you know, probably untechnical to a fault a lot of the time in a lot of my work. It really is about feeling and process more than result for me much of the time, although that's a challenge when it comes to, you know, making a living and promoting myself as I started to try to do online. So I'm meeting those in the middle somewhere. I'm not always sure where.
And what do you have planned next for your music? Like, what's the next step?
That's a good question. I almost broke up with the band earlier this year because I felt like we were really just not getting to the feeling that I wanted. And since I complained to my bandmates, we've tightened it up a little bit. And ironically, in the scope of this conversation, it has been more like bringing it a little more technical, just because, again, playing together is like, you still need, you know, you got to sound good, which sometimes we don't. So I've been really working on that, but I've been doing some side dabbling with like an acoustic group that I play with that I just mainly sing. And we've been just doing covers, which I was really resistant to, but I've embraced that there's some growth opportunity for me there. So I'm not really sure. That's a good question. And as I've looked at my endeavors to create this Unity PlayStation brand, I am well aware that there's a little tension between the time I spend on my music and the time I need to spend on developing this new brand. And I'm not sure how it's going to evolve this fall. I trust that it's going to, you know, work itself out as I just stay focused on being true to myself. And I'm not sure whether that will be. So we had plans to do. I produced our first album with 1,000 Words last, I guess it was 2 years ago now. And we had intentions of having another album out of all original stuff, or, you know, CD album, both of those outdated terms, a group of music. And with the new bass player, it just hasn't come together in the last year. And so the lead guitar, Wayne, and I have talked about just putting out a couple singles. And so we may do some more studio work this fall to try to do that. I'm a little hesitant because it tends to feel a little stagnant. I don't know how much you've done quite a bit of studio work probably. Right. So like it's a different thing to.
Oh, like just, you mean like recording it and always getting the right takes and everything.
Yeah. Trying to bring that together is a whole different exercise than just playing and trying to sound good in the moment, you know, or get that feeling. So trying to capture that feeling and it doesn't get stale, but it is, I've come to accept that, you know, just is what it is. Like as you've probably gathered from seeing some of my stuff, I'm pretty comfortable with imperfection, and I like the term rawlicious. One of the things I try to do in my own expressions is kind of open the door, give people permission for their own imperfections. And I say imperfections with kind of a little side smile, because I think, you know, everything's perfect in its imperfection. A lot of times we get paralyzed by that desire to be perfect, which, you know, just keeps us from taking action. So I try to not get too hung up on that and just move forward. And if I catch myself telling stories that are not serving me, I just try to stop it and shift to something better.
And I guess, like what you were saying, some of that capturing, like not like being okay with like imperfection or capturing the moment is lost when you go into the studio, because you're trying to recreate like the perfect feeling. But when you're live, you're, you know, it's the energy of the audience and you're more in the moment.
Yeah, live mistakes happen, and then, you know, it just is what it is, and you go, you're not starting over, you're just getting through the song, and it's rare that we play a song without a mistake, you know, but we still have, you know, plenty of great sets where it feels good, even with the mistakes in there. And whereas when in studio, I try to limit it to 5 takes, I want to say 3, because I really just try to, you know, get to the feeling that day and then pick the best and then move forward. But the challenge has been in working with other, like, that would be fine. And part of why I would like to set up my own studio is because then I'm just making myself happy with, you know, trying to make the studio people happy and my fellow musicians, you know, trying to find a set of takes that everybody likes is exponentially increases the challenge of that.
Yeah, that's why you're asking like me earlier, because like I was recording some music because I have a Shure SM57 mic that I have like an adapter that goes in the computer, and then I use this podcasting mic, the Blue Yeti, to record singing vocals. So yeah, that's why.
Yeah, I'm interested. Well, and I have some books that I'm interested in making audiobooks from, and then yeah, I would love to just have a little setup to really explore on my own without that additional pressure of other people's egos. Just me and my own ego.
You want to get into audiobooks too, or you have stuff you wrote that you want?
Yeah, so I have three little booklets, and I wrote my first, what I consider my first real book, earlier this year. Published it, self-published, and it is very much an experiment. It's called 47 Truths, and I really wrote it with the intention of it being in audio format, so it's in my voice very much, you know, and I think that doesn't really come through in reading it very well. So I'm looking forward to making that an audiobook. And like most of my work, it's very much an exploration, very imperfect, and yet I'm proud of it and happy that it feels like a step along, you know, a step in a river crossing, maybe.
So has being an author been something you've pursued?
Yeah, that's something I think I've always considered myself a writer as long as I can remember. I've been reading and writing but I don't remember learning to read and write. It's been since I was very young, like pre-4 probably. And in my early pre-pubescent years, I wrote all, you know, every day and read. I grew up without a television in the house a lot of my life, so reading was my main escape and my best friend. And it's been exciting to become an author. And even though I haven't really promoted that side of myself, I have probably some ego stuff in the way about my own imperfections. Because I've read so much, I know how good writing can be. And certainly my writing is nowhere, you know, up to where I would like it to be. And yet, true to my own form, I've just went ahead and produced and published my imperfection, knowing that that's my, you know, on the path to me getting better. So I have several books in the works right now that I had hoped to have published already this year that, who knows, maybe by next month, at least one more will. One of those is a picture book about my creation of the Head Hut and kind of some of what you're asking me here about, like what inspired that and what my intention is with that. So
I guess like nonfiction or like books about different projects.
So far it's been pretty nonfiction. Although like 47 Truths has an element of fiction. I really tried to bring in all the senses, and it was an experiment that I feel like didn't fully succeed, but I'm happy to have attempted it because I've been thinking about it a long time. So that book starts with a little tidbit about grandmother spider weaving stories, and it's not exactly fiction, but it has a fictional element. I kind of blend fiction and fact, I think, in my, like, to me, life is all made up. It's all what we believe is real, and so I don't have a real hard and fast line between fiction and fantasy, or fiction and nonfiction, fiction and fantasy. There's no line there, is there?
Because fiction's like, or fantasy is sometimes a way of expressing the truth.
I actually, like, I've started with nonfiction because as I've been in college, or I'm no longer in college, but was for 15 years, and in that certainly. So in my younger years, I read almost all fiction, and then I kind of switched to nonfiction. And in my writing that's come out first has been mostly nonfiction. But I guess I kind of see writing fiction as a evolutionary step from, because I do think that you can really get at the truth more directly through fiction in an interesting way. Like it takes away some of the factual boundaries that we have, you know, and really lets us explore the real feeling of things. So I'm intrigued by that, but I guess it hasn't quite come out of me yet.
Yeah, because I guess there can be less limits if it's fiction. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the many things I have in the works is a novel called Hard to Love, which I've been working on for a few years. And that's sort of a life story, but I do plan on having it be a fiction, you know, like basically steeped in fiction, so that I give myself that leeway to really explore what the feelings that I'm trying to get at, or the points I'm, you know, it's just an exploration of love, really. So that's fiction and fact.
Yeah. I don't know what I thought of, because even with Tolkien, who wrote The Lord of the Rings, like, obviously he created Middle Earth. It was like a total fictional world. And I know some of it was influenced by, like, I know he was very religious, too. He also, like, his experiences in World War I kind of influenced, like, some of his writing, too, a bit. Like, as a way to cope, yeah.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned Tolkien, because that was very influential in my youth. That's still so. My little brother's name is Glóin. That comes from the Tolkien, and my mother was going to name me Galadriel, which is also from that same author. My grandmother stepped in and shifted my name to Gabrielle, but so yeah, my mother still spends a great deal of her time reading dragon fantasy books. And so and I was highly influenced by The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy also. So to me, again, which I don't know if you're familiar with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and the author of Douglas Adams was, you know, traveled the world. A lot of that
from his. A little bit, not like super familiar, but I know that, yeah.
And I don't think any fictional author isn't, you know, I mean, all art is a self-reflection, really, I think. So, and every portrait is a self-portrait on some.
And there's aspects of people you know, and different characters, and different aspects of yourself, or ideals of yourself in the fictional characters. Like, it still comes from you. Like, there's still a bit of truth, yeah.
Yeah, and I just think the title, the heading, the label of fantasy or fiction gives a lot more freedom to explore, you know. Then you're not bound by the truth, and you can change some names and not worry so much about, you know, insulting your mother or all the things that come up when you're trying to publish a book of truth, like I just did.
So when did you get started with your YouTube channel? What inspired you to go on YouTube?
I've been doing that probably 3 or 4 years, but about a little over 2 years since I decided I'm going to do this, you know, in a serious way. And I just see it as such a potential for so many things. And initially it was really me. I was sharing my songs, some snowboarding footage. All of it to date is unedited and unscripted, although I'm getting ready to do maybe a little editing. I'm a little hesitant because I like that aspect of it, although I know it keeps me from being more, you know, or it's one of the things that might be keeping me from being more popular is my refusal to polish it up. But I started really just trying to get over anxiety and, you know, perform. I had a really hard time speaking or singing in front of people, which I feel real comfortable with now, and I feel like it's successfully helped me with that. And then at some point I just saw it sort of as a way of documenting and a place to, you know, save my videos without using my own space. And then it was about 2 years ago that I think it was two and a half, it was in February, so it'd be like 2.5 or so years ago that I decided I think I can make this into a money making thing eventually. And I've, you know, been at it all this time, and I'm not even halfway to making it monetizable. So it's been a little bit longer of a row to hoe than I expected. But in that, I've learned so much, and it's I'm feeling more and more like I'm beginning to feel like a part of the YouTube community, which I really like. And I don't know. It's a great. I'm a lifelong learner, and since I finished up college, they won't let me go to college anymore unless I pay my own way. So I had to find other ways of learning, and that's been one of them, I guess. Is and then just as a person who likes to express myself, and I guess wants to be seen on some level, YouTube is is nice for that.
That's interesting. You talked about, I guess, the YouTube community being positive, because I know there's a very, I feel like there's a very toxic side to YouTube too, like kind of the whole pwnage culture and like this, like these different YouTube arguments people get into in the comments. It's interesting that I found your channel in the comment of a Joe Rogan episode. Like, usually I find just very negative people right. in like the comment section of YouTube, but then I found your channel with like had a lot of positive and interesting, you know, videos. Yeah.
So I have many online mentors who don't know me, but I've been an avid fan of, and one of those is Gary Vaynerchuk. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he says, he has a saying which he says often, which I really like, which is that social media and the internet doesn't change us, isn't, you know, bringing out the worst, it's just exposing us. And I do, that has been my experience as well. So in posting videos, I've gone through some transition of at first feeling, you know, vulnerable or wanting to cultivate how I appear. And then I did some recordings with a different group of a different band, that a garage band that I've dabbled with also for 4 or 5 years. And I try to do this series. I did do a series called Fire Pit, where I was just recording our drunk conversations around the fire, you know, after band practice. And some of my bandmates got really worried about how they would look or how they would come across, even though I wasn't showing faces. Just it was interesting to me, the level of concern. And it kind of highlighted, well, one of my bandmates said that I'm just, you know, I don't know how lucky I am to live this free life and to feel like I can express myself however I want without worrying about my boss, you know, or somebody else reprimanding me about it. And I guess that's true for me. I feel like I did feel that way at one point, but I quickly saw that I actually saw this way back even before Facebook, like in MySpace. I really dabbled in the social media and saw the opportunity for self-growth, because it's just another mirror to me. And so with regards to the toxicity on YouTube and really in all the social media platforms, I see humans, you know, kind of back to that comment I made about society sometimes being like a competition for who has the shittiest story. I see a lot of that going on, but I'm more and more clear on that's not what I want to be. And so I see that always as an opportunity for me to, I am getting pretty good at sensing when I have some resistance or some stickiness or some defensiveness myself. And sometimes I still, but I'm able to see it as an opportunity most of the time and not feel like it's some, you know, dark, heavy thing anymore. That I think still a lot of people really do get caught in the heaviness of, I think that's just the human psyche, the ego, the false ego self, as some people call it, that we're, I like to think, attempting to evolve out of or past or into, I'm not sure how to phrase that, but expand.
One of the main things message you want to get out to people is like, don't limit yourself.
Yeah, be you, be true to you is a phrase that I've been saying since before we invented memes, you know. I think, and since I was very young, I was real clear on that. And I'm blessed with, as I mentioned, my mother, who's heavy into fantasy and who really raised me with the strategy of letting me. So she read a lot about how kids can pick their own foods. And I can remember having friends that had to ask their parents for permission to what to eat. And I just found that I couldn't fathom it at first. So, I mean, and now, you know, 40 years later, I've come to certainly recognize that there's why a parent might do that, you know? And I think I probably slid the other way to some extent and was pretty controlling with my son in some ways. But I appreciate that the way my mother raised me, which was, basically completely wild, has allowed me a certain mental, emotional freedom that I think a lot of people haven't experienced as much of, I guess.
Yeah, I guess a balance of both, like being free and then...
Yeah, I mean, I would say that for me, the challenge in that has been coming to terms with society and not feeling like I'm in opposition to it, which I did definitely as a juvenile delinquent. You know, I mean, I was literally locked in a cage for not conforming. So I, and I was, you know, very spitfire, rebellious against, like, literally set things on fire, to that, you know, for a, until, again, until I became a parent, I would say, or around, you know, some, I have had some chronic health stuff too that's played into that picture of me. So I was diagnosed real early with autoimmune disorder that, and told that I would die young and that I would be ill my whole life. And so that really colored a lot of my early years and still does. I mean, in a lot of ways, to be fair, but it's allowed me a lot of evolution of coming to understand that I own myself and that I'm in charge of my own vibration and that everything that I experience is the result of what I'm lining up with.
Synchronicity, in a way, I guess, kind of like everything happens.
Yeah, I get hesitant about the everything happens for a reason, you know, spiel sometimes, but it's like you tune your radio dial to a certain frequency and you get that station, right? It's similar, like what I'm vibrationally attuned to is dictating the experience that I have. I believe that's true of all of us. And I think a majority of the time of the majority of humans still tend to want to blame someone else or something else for our experiences. But that's probably pretty fundamentally at the core of my beliefs is a sense of personal responsibility and sovereignty for my own experiences. And my mother raised me with she believes in reincarnation, and I don't not believe in it, but I don't know, you know, what happens when we die. I find that story very comforting, and so I kind of live with the probability that there's a lot more lifetime beyond this one lifetime, and that helps me put that into that context, I guess, that even, you know, how we're born, the bodies we're born into, that there's a vibrational sovereign aspect to even those things, which is part of what I get a lot, you know, probably the thing I get the most pushback from people who are suffering and who don't, you know, who get understandably angry and resentful that I would say, well, you brought that shit on yourself, which is a saying that my friends and I use a lot.
I guess like if there's like a kid with like leukemia or something like that, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, I understand why, you know, and I wouldn't say to, you know, a mother of a kid of leukemia, well, that kid asked for that, but I have a good friend lately, one of my newest friends from online, who has a son with autism, and we do talk. She believes in soul, kind of, you know, like a broader scope of life beyond just this body, and she does believe that she and her son have like a soul contract where they agreed to, you know, have this relationship in this lifetime to really learn about self-love and self-acceptance and just the diversity of, you know, the potential diversity of life. And I think so much suffering comes from that judgment of things. Now, you know, I've been beaten, I've been raped, I've had, you know, I've been ill, I've had a lot of experiences that people would say, well, you know, that's not your fault. And in fact, that's a common thing that people say, so I agree, like fault and blame don't get us anywhere, but responsibility, you know, alignment, destiny, maybe even, you know, like just, I like the radio dial analogy, like what you're tuned to is what you're getting. And certainly when you're a child, I don't think you're consciously, deliberately choosing, you know, most of those details, or even as an adult, really. But I still do think that ultimately, again, I don't know for sure, but I like the thought. I find it comforting and empowering, I guess, to think that ultimately that is my mind to navigate.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily, like, sometimes there could be things beyond your control, but you choose where you go forward with that.
Yeah, absolutely, exactly. There's plenty I don't have control over, and it's not like I think, you know, that everything is under my control, but I think it's my job to learn how to control myself, and if we all do that, then then experiences keep getting better. And it's delightful when you really, like, we tend to think it's a bad thing when things don't go as we expected or as we planned. But, like, if everything always went as we expected and planned, that would get pretty boring pretty quick, right? So, like, I think there's a beauty and a deliciousness to the way things don't work out the way we plan, or, you know, and then when you bring in the freedom of choice, of will, that we all have, and the way we interact and, you know, seem to endlessly get hung up on thinking we're going to get somebody to do or feel something, and then invariably they usually don't, and we have the option to feel like that's a bad thing or to see the opportunity in it. And I more and more feel successful in finding the opportunity. It doesn't mean I don't still struggle or, you know, prefer some things over other things. It just means that I less and less do I get feel like I'm hung up on that, like, why does this always happen to me, or blame, or, you know, I say that with an element of drama, because I do think, like, plenty of times I feel that, but I quickly do try to over dramatize it and even allow myself a, you know, like a good wail sometimes, to go like, why me? Might as well go eat worms. And then, you know, it becomes silly pretty quickly. And I see that, and as soon as I can change my own internal vibration, things work, things get better, things work out, you know.
So it's not not resisting what it is. It's like, not, you don't necessarily, like, it's not that you just accept what is, or that you don't try to change it. It's like not resisting, like, yeah, accepting the reality.
Yeah, I use that word resistance a lot lately in my day-to-day talking, and I responded to something online not too long ago where I said resistance is futile, and I had some activists get really upset at me and say that was the saddest thing they'd ever heard. And I understand their sentiment, but I really was getting at exactly what you're getting, skirting around now, which is that it's not that I don't think we should change things. It's that I think resisting them resistance really is futile. It really does just grow the thing you're resisting. It's, you know, the turn the other cheek. It's the flow of water. It's
well, like Martin Luther King, like he was only able to help change things because he was he totally faced reality, and then he's like, okay, I'm facing reality. He wasn't resisting reality, like he was, but like he was accepting what was and like seeing where to move forward with that.
Yeah, absolutely. All the greats who inspire me, when I look at, you know, why they inspire me, it's pretty much comes down to that very thing of not being limited by the now, or our perception of now, accepting it, but not resisting it, and not letting it cause that, you know, that resistance is a short, like, it short changes our internal power, our ability to change. I think, you know, when you just feel like this is wrong, that doesn't help make it right, you know, whereas if I say there's an opportunity here to become better, then that opens up a little door to say, you know, it's not that I like, you know, children having leukemia, to use that example, but it's that there is much growth in cancer, for example, for us to learn acceptance, for us to learn all kinds of things, from compassion and acceptance to, I really think that, like, cancer is a great example. I've said to people before that I think cancer will be with us until we learn to love cancer. And some people are very resistant to that idea. But, and again, it's not, you know, I've had two of my grandparents died of cancer, so it's not like I'm an advocate of cancer, but I see that, that it's not wrong. It's in perfect alignment with what we are currently, you know, putting out and experiencing and lining up with. And, you know, I, like, just to go with that analogy a little further, humans are kind of cancerous on this planet right now. So it makes sense that we would be struggling with that. And I really do feel like it's the resistance to that that continues to add fuel to it in a lot of ways.
So any final thoughts or anything you'd like to say?
That's a good question too. I just that I am an advocate of love. I used to tell my mom I wanted to have a party and invite the whole world. And then YouTube and the internet really did bring about this epiphany, which is kind of ongoing in me, that we are having a party and the whole world is invited and participating. And just like a lot of parties that we've all experienced, not everybody's having a good time, but most of that's by their own choice and free will. And so I will continue, and you can trust me to continue to do my best to find joy, choose love, be a conduit for creativity and expansion. And I more and more trust my fellow human beings to be doing the same, which I find delightful.
Yeah, and what's interesting about, like, what you were saying about, like, tuning into the radio, I mean, it was a podcast, it wasn't a radio, but, like, because you commented on you were listening to the Joe Rogan Experience, and then you commented on that episode, and then I found your channel, and then, like, you ended up on this podcast, and it created a whole new podcast episode.
Yeah, and that's a great, beautiful example of what I'm talking about, where when you trust and you just show up and do the best you can with what you got from where you are and be truest to yourself, things work out pretty well. And yeah, when I checked out, so I noticed you were commenting on my stuff a little, and then like I mentioned, didn't really realize you had a podcast till I saw something on Instagram, and then checked out a couple episodes and almost sent you a message and asked if I could be on your podcast. And I just knew that it would work out. And so, like, it was probably a day or two after I had that thought that you asked me if I'd like to be on your podcast. So things work out. One of my mantras is things are always working out for me, or everything I want is always in all ways flowing to me with ease. And when I focus on that, it is true.
Yeah, and this ended up being a great episode. We got into, like, some really good stuff. So
thanks. I'm glad. I look forward to hearing it. It's always hard to have any perspective of that, you know, from the inside. But
yeah,
I am. I appreciate that you took the time to talk to me, and yeah, I look forward to hearing more. Cool.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on and all that.
Yeah, thank you.
Alrighty, so that was the conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. I feel like I already said all my conclusions about what we talked about at the end, and we both said our conclusions. I'll just leave it there with that. And I'll post a link to Gabrielle's YouTube channel and her website and her business website. And I recently made my own all-in-one website, SeanNeese.com. It has my podcasts, my writing, my acting, like my acting reels, and everything else. And it also, I'm going to put my music there when I get more further along with this EP I'm working on for my music project, Insomniac AD. So the podcast, that's just a secondary place it'll be, because I think it's good to have everything I do in one place. But I'm still definitely going to keep the blog spot up too, because that's the source of the RSS feed, and I really like that blog too. That's about it for today. I'll catch you on the next episode.